It's time for Arts Live and Local. This is Carol, your host. Well, the weather is doing its thing. I think actually Stormy Weather Arts Festival is happening in 2 weeks in Cannon Beach. But it is Halloween weekend and Day of the Dead, and so it's appropriate for us to have such interesting weather. It's actually 60-some degrees, so who can complain? The wind is blowing. Do be careful if you've got a little car, and stay off the bicycles probably this weekend. Hey, I'm going to start off with some Cannon Beach folks, so I have a song for you to start right out. This is from the Floating Glass Balls, Cannon Beach Junction. Thanks for being here, folks. They talk about the busyness and the junction. Well, it's been made a little bit better by the new road that went in a couple of years ago. But actually, I have a couple of experts here on Cannon Beach, and I'm going to let them tell you everything there is to know that's allowed on the radio, because you got to be careful around here. You never know what people are going to say. My guests are Professor Peter Lindsay. Hi, Peter.
You do. How are you? Yep.
Be on the mic.
My pleasure to be here, of course, as
and
always.
Good. I'm so glad you're back. And Reimar Bartel.
Hi, Carol.
Good to see you.
Likewise.
Anytime. Okay. Well, they're here, though, because there is a very special event going on. And if all goes well, there will be a republishing of the book Coming In Over the Rock, A Storyteller's History of Cannon Beach by Peter Lindsay. And the event that's going to help raise money for this is happening Tuesday, November 10th. So that is a week from this coming Tuesday. So you do have time to get ready. And music will be by none other than the Floating Glass Balls. And also there will be storytelling by Peter and others, I understand. So put this on your calendar at 7 o'clock at the Chamber Community Hall in Cannon Beach. That's right on Spruce Street. And let's hear what it's all about. So, Peter, what is this book? well, tell us, where'd it come from?
On days like this, as a child, when I would haunt an old service station, and the man who owned the service station would say, "Well, boys, she's coming in over the rock today." That would be Haystack Rock for those
Wait
of you.
Wait a minute, you grew up in Cannon Beach?
Well, I'm not quite grown yet. I'm still kind of childish.
Oh, we won't go into
Yeah,
that.
I'd been there. Well, my family came. We didn't come when Haystack had the foundation put under it, but we were there when they started building the needles.
All right.
So we've been there a long time. We're the DAR of Cannon Beach, with the Swaggerts and the Schroff family and Don Howell and a few others.
How fabulous. Okay, sorry to interrupt you, but I just had to establish that. Now, remember, this guy's a storyteller, so
Watch him.
Salt ready, folks.
Watch him.
Just
dangerous.
In case, yes. So you've been there for a long time, so that's how the title or the stories?
Exactly. I took the title from that gentleman's phrase, George Malmsted, who owned the service station. I have a little introduction here that might flesh that out slightly.
Great.
From my book. This is the introduction to the original, and we're going to keep that. So I'll begin with that, I think.
Sure.
"Well, she's coming over the rock today, boys," George would comment as the rain slashed at the windows of the shambling, yellow-washed building. Five or six of us were slouched and huddled around the old oil stove at Malmsted's Shell Station in Cannon Beach. The station sat on the corner of Gower Street and Hemlock, north of Haystack Rock, although there was no Gower Street then. The year was 1957. Several of us were hormone-addled teenagers, filled with visions of souped-up Chevrolets and nights at the drive-in movie. We called George Malmsted Happy Tooth because he perpetually grinned, tolerated us in the recesses of his rattly old weathered garage, and generally filled the gaps in young adolescent boys' lives with stories and a constant string of fascinating patrons. When the dogs of winter howled and snapped at the single-wall, shingled old service station, George would hole up with us in the office. What I would describe, to be gentle, as characters, spirited in and out of the building, stopped to comment on the nature of existence, regaled us with stories of logging, fishing, women, fighting, and the old days. And he generally enchanted the imagination of a 16-year-old boy. Well, the stories and the characters stuck in a way that affected me deeply. What would we be, I ask, without stories? I feel privileged to have known those times and people, many of whom made this village of Cannon Beach what it has become in the collective imagination. For many years, I have hoped to devote some days to sharing those anecdotes and memories of a place and times passing. And perhaps I am singularly equipped to do so at this late date. This story will be an account of the village I have known, some of its history and characters. And if I err on the side of historical veracity, well, so be it. It's anecdotal. I hope the account will serve to flesh out in some small way those people and the place they occupied in an earlier day. As I sit at my desk this February day, the rain-filled southwest winds buffet the second-growth hemlock and spruce outside, snarling and snuffling through the trunks and branches, gnawing, eroding, yet nurturing the land I have known and loved. This is a North Coast day. The weather is, indeed, coming in over Haystack Rock. It's winter, the long, dark time, a time of stories. I salute the many souls who have lived and died in this place and made it a place so many cherish. And I have to say, from a personal standpoint, that for me, given the transitory nature of existence, stories are one of those few things that do, they adhere and they have a permanence that few other things do. Most religions are, in a sense, stories, and each of us, in my opinion, once our life is completed, have lived a story, really. I mean, that's essentially what we become, I think, is a story. And as my friend Carl, who's Carl Marlantis, he's written an additional introduction for the new edition of my book. He says, histories inform, but stories connect. And I like that very much. Mm-hmm. I think there's something to be said for that.
Mm-hmm. And bring alive. And as long as you mentioned Carl, give us an aside. Tell us, remind folks who he is and how he connects with your story.
Well, his father was the president of Clatsop College, if I'm not mistaken. His father was also the principal of the high school when I attended school there. Carl's brother was the president of the Lincoln Center in New York City before his death. His brother, who is my age, young man.
Wow. Okay.
Carl himself was a Rhodes Scholar, probably one of the most decorated Vietnam veterans. I believe he was a Fulbright scholarship. He's constantly in demand for economic summits, and he is most famous at this time in history for producing a New York Times bestseller called Matterhorn. It's been touted as the red badge of courage of the Vietnam War. It's a wonderful novel about Vietnam.
And he came here and gave a reading.
He gave several readings here, appeared on the Columbia Forum on one occasion, I recall.
just recently. It was in the last year, wasn't it?
He and I were in Seaside at the Convention Center for the Tillamook Head Gathering last February.
So now what's his connection with
the book? He's written a nice new introduction to the reissue of Peter's book that we hope to launch. It just reflects on how important stories are to the sense that any place has of itself. So that's how Carl fits in.
Well, I am thrilled because I agree entirely with your evaluation of stories. And I think the sad part is that many people and places don't the stories. Everybody's a storyteller, actually, but there's no one recording or capturing, whether it's in writing or orally. And so many stories are lost. And so I really appreciate what you've done and what you're going to do again.
As a folklorist, I have to say, you know, my graduate work, considerable, was done in the realm of folklore.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my pet peeves as a folklorist, essentially, is that, you know, unless things are archived, they vanish. And I was telling Reinmar on the trip up, I listened to a KMUN program one morning when a gentleman was telling stories about his Teamster days with horses, bringing wagon loads from the eastern part of Oregon to the coast here, and, you know, what was entailed in doing that. And he was probably the last connection, at least for someone like myself,
to that way of life.
That it actually lived through those things.
Yeah.
And if you can capture those.
My brain is spinning because I'm thinking, you know, I give a shout out to Nova Scotia each week because my dear friends are there and it's like my heart home. And I realize so many stories. They are lost unless, and fortunately people, I think, what do you think, both of you, more people are realizing the value for oral histories, for example, have come into play.
Yeah, I'm gonna kind of switch a little bit, and just my job here is to plug our fundraiser.
You better do that before we run
and
out
so
of time.
I'm gonna do that.
Reinmar's keeping us on track, folks.
So Peter's written this fabulous book, and through the vagaries of time, it's gone out of print.
Vagaries.
And so we have got to get the resources together to reprint it.
Yes.
And this is really our one shot to do it, and I think it's gonna be a wonderful event. It's gonna be a great community event.
What's gonna happen there?
Well, I think we've got a couple of things. Of course, step back a little bit. As I mentioned, the book's gone out of print, which is very sad. We want to get it revived. And we've got an arrangement set up with Portland State University. They have a book publishing program, and they've agreed to reprint Peter's book in their winter term.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need to raise about $4,000 to $5,000 in order to do that.
We can do that.
And I think
we can
absolutely,
do that.
Absolutely.
This community, come on.
And so, we've got a couple of premiums. We didn't want to hound all the Cannon Beach businesses for silent auctions and this kind of thing. But we do have a couple of things for folks that give $100. They're going to get a signed copy of Peter's book when it comes out again, and Peter will autograph that for them. And also, if they want, they'll get acknowledgement in the book. In the Wall of Fame. The Cannon Beach Book Company is also donating for the first 10 people that give $50. They'll get a $15 gift certificate to the book company.
Is this true, dinner for six with Peter? What's that about?
Well, that's absolutely
that's a grand prize.
That we're going to have an auction. Hank Johnson, the owner of the Wavecrest in Tolovan, has agreed to provide dinner for six with the storyteller. And for those of you that don't know Hank, he is a superb chef, and it'll be truly a wonderful meal. So that's sort of our premium, and we're going to have an auction. We're going to start at $300, and I think groups of people can get together.
I was going to say, dinner for six. I mean, six people or three couples or whatever can get together and picture.
Exactly.
And the bottom line is, all the money is going to reprint this book, which needs to be here.
Exactly.
And it won't go out of print. the next time. Somebody's going to be watching over this, I hope.
Well, exactly. and you know, with the wonders of modern technology, that's so much easier to do. I know very little about it, but on-demand printing now, it's essentially always there. So.
Let's remind folks, this is Tuesday, November 10th. That's a week and a half from now, 7 p.m. at the Chamber Community Hall. Now, can everybody who shows up get in?
Or absolutely.
They don't have to get tickets in
there's
advance.
There's no tickets.
Okay.
There's no charge. Just come. In addition to being a fundraiser, I think Peter's going to read some of his stories. And then we're also hoping that people will step up and tell their stories of Cannon Beach. I think it's going to be that kind of an event. And so something for everybody to come to. I would also say that for those that can't come to the chamber that night, there is another way to give. The Cannon Beach Book Company will take your check, and you can stop by the book company, which is at 130 North Hemlock Street, and drop off a check and make it out to Peter, or you can put it in the mail. Their P.O. Box is 1098 Cannon Beach. And of course, the zip there.
1098, and the zip is 97110.
Right.
Got it.
So those are the details.
This is the Cannon Beach Book Company.
Cannon Beach Book Company. Yeah. Okay. They have been very instrumental in getting us as far as we've gotten to date.
Okay. Coming in over the rock, a storyteller's history of Cannon Beach. I need to understand, because I didn't have a chance to read this book. What did you do? Did you collect stories over time? Did you rewrite? These are all written by you, or what?
I use sources, of course. The Cannon Beach History Center, the Seaside History Center. We were able to secure, at that time, some photographs from those institutions. A good deal of it is anecdotal.
Anecdotal, right.
It's
through your filter.
Yes, it filters through my sensibilities, and Lord knows what might transpire at that point, you know.
That's fantastic.
So, there's some disclaimers.
It's definitely not the official history of Cannon Beach.
No.
Wait a second. Now, I have never seen an official history. I know Uncle Mike's. That wasn't particularly official either.
I have a very dear friend who's gone now, Terrence O'Donnell.
Oh, yes.
Who wrote another wonderful character, lived across the river. We're old dear friends. God bless him. He's gone.
Yes.
He had a place called Crank's Roost
at
Seaview. A lovely man. But he wrote, I would consider, a significantly more official document than mine. Mine's a little more seedier underpants, if you will.
And the stories are all over the map?
Well, I have a couple if you'd like.
Do you have something short?
Yeah, I have a fairly short one.
Okay.
I was going to mention, too, just to give them some credit, I believe the Coconuts, that would be Gary Kaske and Bill Hayes.
Uh-huh. They're going to play also?
Apparently going to play if there's any justice. I gave them some mushrooms. And
that's edibles, folks.
John Mercero. And his daughter may sing a few tunes.
Okay, so it's going to be a party. Basically, it's going to be a party.
And
if you've ever been to, beautifully, we've had memorials in Cannon Beach for some of the best folks there, some of the writers and artists. And when people in Cannon Beach come together, everybody's welcome and everybody has a good time. Go ahead, Peter.
Okay.
Give us another.
Here's just a short story
Lindsay.
It actually comes from a book called The Well-Traveled Casket. And it was published several years ago. And I will tell you that once in a time now long gone, there was a small weathered tavern that sat at the current site of The Landing, just south of Osborne's Ice Creamery in Cannon Beach. And the proprietor was an irascible old character named Stanley Witaski. He was a Polish man. And his frugality attained legendary status in our little town. On my 21st birthday, an old logger named Tommy Stanton took me out in the town to celebrate with my first legally purchased beer. He insisted we go to Stanley's Sunset Tavern and make Stanley buy me a beer on the house. Tommy told the following story at the Sunset Bar on that occasion, and I'll read you that story. One day a logger, he was working up behind Cannon Beach, setting chokers and complaining. Now, he was telling this story to Stanley while we were sitting at the bar. Suddenly, a ferocious voice came out of the sky. asking what all the griping was about. The logger looked up and realized it was God talking. So he started to explain what a miserable life he had been leading. His only hope was that he might go to a better place of rest when he died. Well, God looked down and said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. If you accomplish a few things that need doing around here, projects that I haven't had time for, I'll make sure you get into heaven." The logger agreed. God said, "The first thing I want you to do is move that big mountain off there, that Saddle Mountain, farther south, closer to Cannon Beach." So the logger worked for years and years, and he finally finished moving it a shovelful at a time. Then he called to God, and God spoke to him and said, "That's good, but I got another thing for you to do. I need the South Fork Elk Creek moved around about 2 miles further north." So the logger slaved away for years and finally rerouted the creek and went to call on God again. And God said, "That's good, but there's one more thing you got to do, and then you can be assured of a place in heaven." "What's that?" said the logger. "I want you to go down to Stanley's Tavern in the Sunset Tavern in Cannon Beach," said God, "and sit there drinking till Stanley buys you a beer in the house. And when he does that, you can be sure of a place in heaven. And as the story goes, you can go down there to that tavern to this very day, and that logger is still sitting there waiting for his free beer." I have to tell you, at that point, Stanley looked across at us and he says, "Well, what do you boys want? It's on the house."
All right! Yeah!
So, Carol, that's the kind of history of Cannon Beach we're talking about.
I love it. I love it. Folks,
we like that sort of thing.
This is not to be missed, unless you don't live around here, in which case you can send a check. But in the meantime, or call us here and we'll let you know. Is there a phone number people can get information, by the way, if they catch this?
Oh, they could call me.
Give me a number.
Yeah, 503-536-2502.
So if you need more information, like where to send and stuff.
Carol, thank you so much.
In the meantime, try to get there Tuesday, November 10th, 7 p.m. at the Chamber Community Hall in Cannon Beach. It's going to be a great party and a chance to toast and roast Peter and get this book out again, Coming in Over the Rock, A Storyteller's History of Cannon Beach. Thanks so much, Peter Lindsay.
Thank you, Carol.
And Reimar Bartle.
Thanks,
thank you,
Carol.
So much. Okay, folks, that's the kind of thing we got going on in our community. I hope your community is just as rich. Here's some music for you for the season. Thanks for being here. Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook. Scary enough for you. Actually, that's a John McCutcheon album. Who ever heard of John McCutcheon being scary? But anybody can work on it. His Halloween from his Autumn Songs. Well, I have right now. I don't think this is going to be scary for you, but it should be fun. Mary Moran is here, and she is with the Riverbend Players, and she's the director of the upcoming 2 one-act Reader's Theater productions. Now, I have it on good authority. That would be Mary's herself, that she is a first-time director. Is that true?
This is very true.
Oh, my. How are you doing?
I it's outside of my comfort zone. I'm used to doing the Cardam Trashin show, which, of course, I can do really
which
easily.
You're fabulous at.
Thank you. It's a great show. But this is different.
How did they sucker you into this?
It had to do with a Riverbend person. I wanted him to be a model in the Trashin show because I needed more models.
Oh, my God. Talk about community.
And that's how it happened.
So you traded.
We traded.
If he would be in the show, you would do the...
Yes.
And he must have known that you would be good because a director is not, you know, that's can be challenging.
He knew he could sucker me into it.
So let's tell folks what it is you're doing. It's... Reader's Theater 2 one-act plays. I'll give you the logistics first. Friday through Sunday, November 13th through the 22nd, and this will be at the NCRD, that's the North County Recreation District Riverbend Room, and that's 9th Street in Nehalem. So tell us about these two plays, Mary.
Well, they're interesting plays. They're both English plays. Mm-hmm. One, a separate piece was written originally as a TV show in 1960. It's by Tom Stoddard. Stoddard,
whom I love.
Yes. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, our dad, that's one of his plays. Mm-hmm.
I just saw one of his last year in New York, actually. It was totally different from other stuff that he's done, but it was wonderful.
And this was one of his early, kind of an early one, but it was done for TV. So, and his plays are all about... people wanting to be separate from the world around them, sort of. And that's kind of what this one is about. It's a fellow who, he just doesn't want to be part of everyday society. He's trying to do something different in his life. It's kind of a post-World War II sort of a thing.
But the way it's written here, a sly, gentle dig at society's conventions and preconceptions.
Well, English society in 1960 said that you were supposed to do certain things. You had jobs, you had families, mm-hmm. and his role is he goes to a hospital. And he wants to stay there because it's a lovely place and he likes it there. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him, but he loves the hospital.
Okay.
Yes, and on
good.
And on from there.
Good. Okay. And this is a one act.
Yes.
When we say one act, how much time is that-ish?
You know, the whole play itself is probably an hour.
The whole production,
Just one of them. The actual timing when you just sit and read it is like, 35 or 40 minutes or mm-hmm. something. But then by the time how we do it as kind of as a radio show. It's like you're doing it on the radio, but we also have an audience. So we do a little bit of movement. Mm-hmm. We have some props.
Oh.
And so when you add all that in, it takes
an hour. A staged reader theater.
It's like a staged reader's theater.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other one?
The other one, The Dear Departed, was, I believe, written in 1909. It's quite a bit earlier time. Mm. And there again, it has to do with conventions in society and what is proper and what is perceived to be proper. It also has to do with taking care of your elderly parents and what's important, the parents or their belongings.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, now... And that also is about an hour?
It's about the same amount
okay.
of time, a little
okay.
less than that. So they're actually short.
Okay, but you get a nice full evening of theater here.
And one thing we're doing with it, mm-hmm. since they are British plays, and they're sort of, they're just an evening of British sort of humor,
okay.
we've decided to serve tea and biscuits at the intermission.
Sweet.
So we will have tea, biscuits, lovely little things in a tea service. And
I love it.
Make it nice.
Lovely. Okay, now this is two Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays. So the two Fridays and Saturdays are at 7 p.m. That's November 13th, 14th, 20th, and 21st. And the Sunday is the 15th and 22nd is at 2 p.m. So 7 and 2 for 3 weekends in a row. And you can get your information and tickets. Two weekends. 3 days each. You know, I used to be good in math. 3 days each weekend for 2 weekends. It's 503-368-7008 for information or advance ticket and tickets. And you can always call here at 4 o'clock, and I'd be glad to give you the information. So, Mary, have you acted on stage?
No.
Have you haven't done any theater at all?
I have never. Minor, very, very extremely minor sort of things.
Oh, that is a riot. And they stuck you into a director right away.
Yes.
So let's see. You still have another week and a half, couple of weeks.
Yes.
And you look good. You're surviving. Did this give you more of an appreciation for theater, for what goes into theater?
Oh, gosh, yes. When I first said I would do this, I was thinking, oh, these are actors. They know what they're doing. I'll just stand here while they read. No big deal. This will be easy. It's like, oh, my gosh, it's not like that at all.
Right. But you are working with experienced folks.
About half of my people are experienced. A couple of them have never done this before and are also learning. But I do have an assistant who works within Riverbend Players.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
only too helpful. Everybody has been so very helpful. And I'm very glad of that.
I admire your courage or your dedication to Cardam that allowed you to sign up for this gig in exchange for the Trash Hunt gig.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing. Do you think you would like to be on stage at some point?
Well, it has made me think that there could be that possibility in the future.
Is that? That's wonderful, really. It's opened up a whole nother area that to use your time wisely in the arts. Again, this is the Riverbend Players present Reader's Theater, two one-act plays, but it's enhanced Reader's Theater quite much. But I'm amused because Mary, I'm going to, for full disclosure, Mary said, don't ask me too much about Riverbend Players because I don't really know much. Now I understand why. I had no idea that you had come into this as if that, because the way I was told was Mary Moran is the director, period. He didn't say first time ever doing theater. So, and the community that Riverbend draws on, is it mostly tri-village people, or who are the actors and the tech people and yourself?
I would say for the most part they are local Manzanita, Nehalem, Wheeler people. We have some of each actually in this particular production. And they're just a lot of retired people mostly. A couple of them aren't. We actually have a 10-year-old girl in this play also.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. So these are, you know, all the people that, they're people that just live in the area, and we like that.
And absolutely.
A lot of talent in our area.
Absolutely. And it's nice. Riverbend has really congealed. It's come together really beautifully, and it's quite official now because actually this weekend is the last weekend for the play that's been going on, and that is Over the River and Through the Woods. And it's also a family drama, and that is tonight and tomorrow night at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. also at the NCRD. Again, that's the North County Recreation District, which is a terrific building that has that is used by many people in the community.
I have something to say about the theater building itself at NCRD. When Over the River and Through the Woods closes, the theater is going to be stripped apart. The stage is being rebuilt. We're putting in real seats.
Oh,
we received a grant to do the next stage of renovating this old auditorium building, mm-hmm. which was now becoming NCRD Theater. So it will be closed, oh gosh, until spring, summer, something.
So where
like
are
that.
You? Oh, that's why you'll
so
be in the
Riverbend
room.
Yes, and there won't be any more performances on or anything until the renovations are going to be wonderful. Yeah. We're all so happy to
I'm
have
sure.
this done.
I'm sure, because those seats were no bargain.
No.
But it is a terrific space. Yes. So congratulations to
thank
everyone
you, yes.
who takes part. And big congratulations to you. I won't tell you to break your leg because you're not going on stage. But wonderful Mary Moran, director of the Riverbend Players, The Dear Departed by Stanley Houghton, and A Separate Piece, that's P-E-A-C-E, by Tom Stoppard, opening, running two weekends, the 13th, 14th, and 15th, and then the next weekend, the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, 7 o'clock for the Friday and Saturday, 2 o'clock Sunday. And you can call and get your tickets at 503-368-7008. Do you think that there will be tickets for sale at the door? I don't know how big this space is.
Yes, it's a small space, but there should be tickets available.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for coming. I'm so glad you didn't get blown away on the road. Mary came up from Nehalem?
Manzanita.
It's all the same to us up here. You know, tri-city, tri-village, as I call you. So thanks so much for coming. And
well, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Okay. And don't forget, folks, tonight and tomorrow night and Sunday is the closing for the Riverbend's production, Over the River and Through the Woods. Let's hear from, let's hear the Hoodoo Bash. Why not? KMUN KTCB wishing you a good Halloween and Day of the Dead.
Station at one end the morning there's a trainload of strangers that just hit town. One has a top hat and one has a falcon, and although they just arrived they know their way around. Out to a house at the edge of the town they're bringing Thunderbird wine and a pound of hash. Come on along if you're one of the people, cause we're gonna get the spirit down at the Hoodoo Bash. All them wizards from the south came up special for the big turnout. Golden Blossom, Singing Bear, they're gonna have a party and they just don't care. Fasten your seatbelts, let down your hair, because tonight is the night we've been waiting for. People in trances and African dances, another kind of life is waiting behind that door. We got supplies that will last for a week, so there ain't nothing can stop us until we crash. When we have kids, we will tell them the story about the night we got the spirit down at the Hoodoo Bash. Mushrooms from Singing Bear, Indian visions that'll curl your hair, and Golden Blossom said she'd make her dandelion wine and morning glory cake. Tell all your friends that you've gone out of town and be prepared to go out of your natural mind. We're gonna rise when the sun's going down, and when the spirit starts to hit, you never know what you'll find. If you're afraid, then you better stay home, because there's no turning back once the dice are cast. Lovers or strangers, we'll all go through changes when we get the good old spirit down at the Hoodoo Bash. Thank you.
Well, it is scary in here, it's true. The scary part is that I've got a room full of artists. That's could be pretty scary, actually. And they're not just any artists. These are our Astoria contingency of faculty artists, in addition to their own personal artistry. And that's from Clatsop Community College. They are here because the next show at the Clatsop Community College Art Gallery is an exhibit honoring Royal Nebberker. And from what I saw, it looks as though the entire faculty, people I don't even know, are going to be involved in this show. Is that right? You want to give us a...
That's right. It's not only our faculty who teach the credit classes, but we also have some of our community ed instructors who will be participating as well. So we're really excited to be showcasing all the work.
Well, it's wonderful. Right here, right now, I have people, all of whom have been my guest here on Arts Live and Local, I'm pleased to say. The voice you just heard was Kristen Schock. Dwight Caswell is running around in circles taking photographs. Hi, Dwight.
Hello, Carol.
No, on the mic.
With any luck.
Don't touch the mic. Just
I should know this by
yes,
now.
You've been here many times.
Yeah, the hopefully these will appear in Coast Weekend with a story.
I see. Okay. And I also have Lucian Swerdlove.
Hi, Carol.
Good to have you here. And Richard.
It's good to be here with you, as always.
Okay. Richard, stop giggling and say hi into the mic.
Hello, everyone, and hi, Carol.
Richard Rowland. This is, so far we've had drawing, painting, design, photography, digital. What's your stuff? Lucian, I've never figured that.
Digital imagery is fine.
Digital imagery.
Or digital stuff. How's that?
Digital stuff. That's okay. Easier for me. And design as well. And Richard Rowland from the entire clay department, which is sculpture and pottery and fabulous international exhibits. And, hi, David Myers is here as well.
Good afternoon.
And David, are you also teaching photography? Or are you the only?
At this point, it's down to just occasionally.
Just
I still love doing it.
Okay. And we also have David Homer teaching photography. He'll be part of this exhibit as well.
David took over the regular year classes that I used to teach.
Okay.
And he will be in the exhibit too.
And Ben Rosenberg, who is a printmaker and is going to be offering a class next term. Rebecca Reed, who...
She does calligraphy.
Okay, is that what she teaches at
class?
The,
yes,
okay,
she does.
She does
She's
paintings.
Also a printmaker, and she does other things, but she's
That's
going
what
to
she,
be... Well, okay. She's teaching calligraphy, yes.
And this man I don't even know, Bill?
Yeah, Bill is a very well-known duck carver.
Oh, wow.
And he's he teaches carving.
Interesting. Has he been doing that for a while?
Yes, for quite a few years.
I guess it's just not something that caught my eye.
He's also on the maritime faculty at the college.
Okay. The maritime faculty working out at the Barbie?
No, down at Mertz.
Mertz.
Yeah, the Maritime Sciences program.
Okay. And is the preservation thing that you're involved with, aren't you, Lucian?
Correct.
Is that through the college or no?
Yeah, that's a program at the college.
And where does that operate from?
All over the place. Down at Mertz, the main campus, and
now
all
I,
over the community.
Now I understand why I'm a little confused. Yeah. Dwight, what are you teaching?
I'm in the community ed program. Let's see, working title for my winter class is going to be Earn Your Black Belt in Photoshop. And then spring I'll be teaching a digital photography class.
So we are rich in photography.
Yes, we are. It's a wonderful medium. You can do lots with it.
And what are you going to be offering?
By way of courses, I'm not really sure right now. We're looking at some sort of a tutorial where if people have a need for a half day's instruction in accomplishing something with Photoshop or copying paintings or mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So it'll be specialized.
On an as-needed yeah. basis.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Boy, the art department feels like it's exploded. I don't know. It's very impressive. So now tell us about this exhibit that's coming up.
Well, we're really pleased to be able to feature Royal's work. This is meant to really celebrate and honor his service at the college, and we would like to show our work as well. And
Okay, so Royal was taught at the college for, what, over 30 years, probably.
Yes.
Have any of you been around that long at the college?
We've been around, but not at the college.
I knew that was
No, I've taught for about 15 years.
Wow.
With Royal. Most of that time was full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to know Royal pretty well. And, yeah.
So why did you want to do this show?
Well, we really wanted to honor his memory. It was a huge loss when he departed, and he was such a driving force behind our department and its development in the community, and we really wanted to honor his memory with this show.
I just realized there may be folks out there who have not tuned into this show in the past 15 years and gotten to know Royal Nebaker was an esteemed, internationally known artist. And here in our area in the last, I don't even know, 10 years or more, he developed, he was teaching printmaking and developed an entire society of printmakers that
the
live
North
on.
The North Coast Printmakers
Collective,
yes.
Yeah.
Many of whom were his students and are still carrying on with their group, yes.
So it was an extraordinary gift to the community. So the show that we're talking about that's coming up on the opening, I guess, is the 12th, which is of November, which is a Thursday evening at 6 p.m. And tell us what's going to be there of your own. I understand you'll have works of Royals. And there are so many. I feel so rich right now. There are so many of you here. Tell us what you're going to be sharing.
Well, actually, I want to start briefly by saying a little more about Royal. He was, first of all, extraordinary as an artist and has probably the painting career of the best reputation of anybody in this town. He was an enormously creative force for the college. He set very high standards and for both the gallery and the teaching program and met them. He was very generous to students and colleagues. You know, Royal really was the rising tide that lifted all boats. And I count myself very fortunate to have crossed paths with him and been one of those boats that was lifted.
Well, now, you were doing a different art form. How did that come together?
Well, my art form has always been photographic.
Exactly. Different from Royal's.
Yes. And I exhibited twice at the gallery in the 1980s, long before I was connected with the faculty. And Royal got to see my work and talked intelligently about it then. It's probably the reason I ended up getting hired when they had a mid-year need for an instructor. Very supportive all along. And, you know, different art media do share an awful lot. Art is a wonderful way to wrestle with the interesting problems of life. And I have no doubt that Royal's emphasis on narrative painting was a real influence on the work that I'm going to be showing in this exhibit, which is three photographs of shop window reflections and shoppers and pedestrians in Spain and Portugal. Mm. It's work that I don't think I would have known how to do if I hadn't seen Royal's work.
Mm.
And that's just typical. I think everybody who crossed paths with him would have a story like that.
Nice. That's David Myers. Thank you, David. That's, yeah. Who else wants to share what you're doing and how it, why it's important in this show?
Well, I think just to add on to what David was saying, I think Royal was also a really strong advocate of the gallery and using that gallery as a teaching gallery and making sure quality shows were brought to the college for students to see and for the community to see. I'm going to be showing a series of, I guess you can call them photo collages, that have to do with ancient rocks and ancient models of the universe. And that's about all I can say on the radio to describe them.
If you have ever experienced Lucian and his work, you will know that it's going to be something interesting and unusual, I must I must say. And, thank you for mentioning that, because Royal brought in those international shows as well earlier. He had sort of reached out to people in different parts of the world. And this little town of ours, our little community college, is on the map for the arts, and I think together with the radio station has, talk about raising the bar, has really grown this town in my 40 years here in terms of high quality, small town, big town, it doesn't matter. We've got the quality.
So. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Richard?
in terms of showing our work with Royal, I feel like it'll be a different experience. We've all worked with him, and he's no longer here. But there's a certain sense of responsibility that I feel in honoring him. And I think it came from his sense of hope that he put into the students and into the faculty, and that art can make a difference in our community. And so I feel really honored to work with him again.
Yeah, really. Absolutely. This is carrying on the legacy, and I think, there's no doubt in any of our minds that that's what Royal would want to have happen, is to... What of his work is going to be shown?
Well, there's going to be a large oil painting, at least one large one. Also, some of his watercolors. He did some beautiful watercolor, still life, collage, mixed media, and some of his monoprints as well.
And that's Frida Kahlo. Kristen Schock. If you were here with us, you'd know why I said that. She's looking absolutely beautiful and very Frida Kahlo.
Why, gracias. Yes.
Somebody told her this was a TV station.
Dwight, what are you doing with this group?
Well, whether I'm writing or photographing, I've discovered over the years that what I really am is a storyteller. And the story I'm telling right now photographically is of the huge megalithic monuments of Great Britain, Stonehenge, and places like that. So I'll be showing some of my work from that series.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I earlier on my on this show, I had Peter Lindsay from Cannon Beach, a storytelling storyteller's history of Cannon Beach, and we were talking about how important, how crucial storytelling is, and I think, those of us who emphasize community can mm-hmm. speak to that too.
Since I'm thinking of Carol, of Royal in his studio, and I'm thinking of him maybe late at night painting, and I'm thinking of him being kind of in the hum of his own creativity, in the flow of his own creativity. I think I'll put a piece in dedicated to that flow of creativity. Maybe an Anangama piece.
Oh, wow. Okay. Nice. Nice. So the show is still forming, it sounds like, which is kind of exciting. Kristen, will you have some work in there?
Oh, absolutely. You were asking about our connection with Royal, and the reason I'm here is because of Royal. When it was time for him to retire as full-time, I was lucky enough to be brought in. He developed such a strong figurative tradition here. I really wanted to be part of helping to carry that on. And he was our first juror for the Au Naturel, gave a lot of support.
How long ago was that?
That was 2016 show will be our 10th anniversary show. It will be in his honor as well. We'll be showing one of his pieces, one of his nudes in the Au Naturel. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, I'll be showing some figurative work. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, Kristen, Royal told me when I was on the selection committee to find a new drawing instructor, and he wanted to know how well you, to make sure that you knew your figurative work.
I think he was happy.
Yeah.
Well, I was thrilled to be brought on to this fantastic group of faculty. I can't tell you what an amazing experience it's been these last 12 years.
I'm hearing this about a lot of figurative work in this show. Maybe I should bring some of mine. We can devote a little corner just to the figure.
Hey, the more the merrier. I think, again, it's I worked with Royal in many capacities, but one of them was many years ago we tried and went for a while, but it kind of imploded, to have an arts council. And we used to meet up at the college, and there were folks from Klatske and I who joined us, and we were going to try to put it together for the two counties, really. So, but again, it's just the idea of quality, constantly making sure. And this is a teaching school, so to have all these incredible artists in the faculty is a tremendous inspiration for the students and for the town.
You're right. In talking to Royal over the years, he told me the best way to learn how to teach that thing that you're teaching is to make work. And he always encouraged me to continually make work so that you'll be able to talk about the art form.
Yeah, yeah. Not just, we don't have anybody who's just teaching. They're all actively engaged and constantly growing and changing and inspiring. So.
Well, and the need to articulate in the classroom is a real spur to growth in one's own artwork.
Wow. This is, I mean, we could go on for quite a while. And unfortunately, we're out of time, but the most important thing, folks, is for you to put this on your calendar, and the show will be up through January 14th. I can't emphasize enough how fun it is to be there for the opening, to meet all the artists and to hear their comments and to feel the energy in the room. On the other hand, you will also want to be there when no one else is around so you can walk around quietly and spend the time studying the art. My guests today, Kristen Schock, David Myers, Richard Rowland, Lucian Swerdloff, and Dwight Caswell, and Royal Nebuchadnezzar Presente. And also showing at the show will be David Homer, Ben Rosenberg, Rebecca Reed, and Bill Antila. Thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for keeping the art alive and happening in Clatsop County in Astoria, and for being here on Arts Live and Local.
Thank you, Carol, for supporting our department.
And this is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook. Folks, there's tremendous number of things going on for Halloween.